lot of us, the behaviors and the way we think today is an extension of the way we were raised. But a lot of times we never stop to look back to say, is that what I want to continue? And yes, in 40 years old, you might very well look back over your life and decide to change. Why? Because I'm being who I've been taught to be, and I'm not who I want to be. Does that make sense to you? I got to give you this next slide. A relationship never gets any better than the problem itself, but a relationship never rises above the problems it can't solve. A relationship never rises above the problems it can't solve. Look, some of you guys don't want to be in a relationship. I'm not going to take that away from you. You're going to be as single as you want to be for your whole life. That's not a problem. But when we decide to make that decision to be in a relationship, I give you several things to go by, five levels. Acquaintances become friends, friends become roommates, roommates become companions, and companions become lovers. And then I give you these characteristics. You have no idea. Look, this is what I developed. You're not going to find anywhere else, but it may help you. It may help you when you find out that, guess what? Number five, collaborative lifestyle. How do we live together? Collaborate. How do we co-labor? Life is what God gave you. Style is how you lead it. Think about that. Life is what God gave you. Style is how you lead it. Two different people coming to share one lifestyle is tough. It's tough. And if you have a partner that says to you, I'm not changing for you, run like hell. Here we go. Another one. Ready? You knew the way I was when you met me, and if you didn't like it, you shouldn't be here. And if you got somebody that's saying that, get out. Quickly. Okay? We're going to talk about a few things. Number one, first thing I want to talk about is habits. All of you guys have habits, right?
Yeah.
Tell me a habit you got. Get one out.
Video game.
You know, boy, that one hits hard. Because when my son was in his teens, it was just, oh my God, all the arguments about, will you please stop video games and do your homework?
Yeah.
Video games. That's a good habit. Give me another habit.
Overworking.
Work can be a habit, right? Remember, wait. A job is what you do to put food on the table. A career is what you do when it's your passion. And I get a lot of guys, they put a lot of hours in because it's their passion. It has nothing to do with money.
Right.
Nothing to do with money. And yet, understand, it's important as you look at characteristics of love relationship, you may have to make the decision, you got to cut back. If you're not there, and you're so involved in your career that you're giving a disproportionate amount of your energy into that, it's quite possible that your kids may not benefit from you being a father. And it's quite possible that your kids have better relationships with the director of the YMCA or the kids down the block. You know? Dangerous stuff, though. However, habit. A habit is an unconscious pattern. Unconscious pattern. You know, when we look at Tampa and we look at the traffic patterns, you know, we tend to drive the same route over and over again. And a lot of times I'm driving the same route and I don't even think about the red light, the green light. I'm just driving. Now it's, if you will, a habit. And yes, driving at time is a habit. Also, what we do when we drive, radio. I like to listen to self-improvement stuff. But you have other habits in your life. Do you work out at the gym? Do you pump iron? Do you have a spiritual relationship with God? Do you pray in the morning? Do you pray at night? Habits. The things that when you don't do them, you self-correct to do them. You self-correct because you've noticed the change. But you know, the problem I have with this, a lot of people don't realize that you are responsible for the habits you develop. And guess what? There are times that you will break a bad habit, but you have to replace it with a good one. You can't just stop doing something. You got to start doing something to stop something else. Does that make sense to you? Listen first, talk twice. I have had to learn to listen. I've had to learn to ask, okay, hey, ready? Here we go. This is called reflective questions. Try it. Y'all leave here, go out, do your day, do your weekend. Try it. The last thing that someone says to you as they're talking to you, take that and reflect it back in terms of inquisitiveness.
What's that mean?
Say, how was your day? You know, my weekend. How was your weekend? My weekend was great. I went fishing and, you know, it was kind of out there with the kids. Oh, how did the fishing go?
So that's more like an active listening.
Absolutely.
Correct.
We call it reflective questions is active listening. Correct. But here's what's cool about it. Most people will not even be aware you're doing it. And as they feed into just talk and talk and talk, first of all, you're going to find you're not going to say much about yourself. That's important. Number two, you're going to find that people change their perceptions of you. And they'll begin to say things, what a nice guy. What a good. And they don't know you any better than they did before. other than that you took the opportunity to validate them by taking interest. Somebody had their hand up? Yes, sir.
Now, what do you do when you come in a situation where you ask a person like that kind of question, like you try to do that with somebody, and they just kind of that type of person to be like, oh, it was straight. You know, like they keep it very simple. Like, you see, like, how was your day? Like, they real dry. You know what I'm saying? Like, blah.
You know, first of all, yes, we have people that really don't know how to talk. And they're very closed and very shut down. I have a buddy like that, and I'll call him right now and say how his day is, and he'll keep it so short and so sweet, I'm uncomfortable. And yet, I really respect him. He's a scholar in my field, he's well known, and yet I cannot figure out how to get him to have a discussion about himself and his life. And those are the people that we just have to give up. We just have to identify that, you know, they're not the kind of folk that wants to have this type of relationship. And you got to respect their desire for privacy, if you will. Some of us are raised in such a way that if you ask questions, people become suspicious. Why are you so interested in me? And I'm not sure that's an asset. I think that's a liability, because my good friends are the ones that are calling me right now and say, hey, Gordy, how are you doing? And my good friends are the ones that have asked enough questions to know me enough to know that something unusual, as I've talked to you about this idea of Rocky Mountain spotted fever, I get a few guys that call, just see how I'm doing. You know, and I don't abuse it, AB, Latin, over, abuse it, abuse to overuse. Because be careful, you'll ask some people how they're doing, and then you're sorry you're asked. What do I mean by that? When I say, hey, how you doing, and you're sorry,
my bills,
and they never shut up. They complain, and they act like victims. I don't have time for victims. I don't have time for victims. If you want to tell me about a problem you got and how hard you're trying to solve it, I'm all in. But if you just want to bitch and tell me about how life's unfair, I don't have time for that.
That's negative.
What do you do with something like that? Because I'm currently talking to somebody.
That's your cool.
And that's every time I
ask. We are all mentors to some extent. Mm-hmm. And so you have to go back and say, you know, I hear what you're saying, but, you know, let's work on how we can solve the problem instead of complaining about the problem. And if you want me to be a person to brainstorm, I'm the right person. But if you want me to be someone that just listens to how life is negative and life isn't working, I'm probably the wrong person. You know? Dysfunctional habits in relationships. I want to remember, that's where we started. I said, hey, I'm Dr. Pillay, we're going to talk about dysfunctional. Hey, we're hitting home run now. These are the top eight that I see in as I've done my clinical practice. The top eight. The number one I see that dysfunctional that seems to be reported more than any other is
silent treatment.
Yeah. You'd be surprised how many people are skilled at the silent treatment. And yet, the silent treatment is a passive-aggressive act. The silent treatment, do you know what I mean by passive aggressive?
Hey, that's so true.
I'm aggressive.
That's what happened to me.
You realize how hard it is not to talk to someone?
That's so
it's an
true.
Intentional act. So I'm aggressively pursuing this relationship in a negative way by being passive. You don't answer text messages, you don't answer telephones, you stay away from places on purpose. Passive aggressive. When we look at people that do the silent treatment, they tend to create more problems. Why? Because as I remove my partnership from you and don't actively involve in solutions, problems accumulate. Third bullet says that it's used more by introverts than extroverts. Introverts tend to use this more than extroverts. Why? Introverted personalities, they tend to stay to themselves. They tend to be good listeners, but as they accumulate problems, they don't look for solutions. If you will, I have a problem like my computer, I get on Google, I find a solution someplace.
Tried that 20 years ago.
You know? But when we didn't have Google, sometimes I pick up the phone and call people. Introvert people are not likely to reach out. That's it. It's not a personality flaw, because sometimes we have to teach an introvert personality, you gotta step up to the plate. You can't just look at the dashboard with the red light and say, oh my God, look, I got a red light. You might have to ask somebody, what does a red light mean? You might have to go to Jiffy Lube. But understand, introverted personalities tend to isolate emotionally. My extroverts always tell me what's going on. Not a problem. Say, how you doing? Oh, doc, let me tell you. Introverts, hey man, how you doing? Good, I'm fine. Next. And then, if you will, last part of this, when we find people that do the silent treatment as a habit, this is a highly, highly, highly dysfunctional love relationship. You can stay married to ever, forever, with a silent treatment, because nobody argues and fights. But what do you think the kids learn?
No communication.
Yeah, they don't problem solve, they learn how to communicate. Yes, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry, I just wanted to ask, growing up, you know, they teach us a lot, like, if you don't have something nice to say, don't say nothing at all. But doesn't that affect into the silent treatment? Because I use that tactic in one of my relationships.
Say it louder one more time. Repeat it slowly so they hear you.
Growing up, like, in households in general, you hear a lot of, if you don't got nothing nice to say in schools too, like, you know, don't say nothing nice at all. If you don't got nothing nice to say, don't say nothing at all. I tried to use that tactic in a relationship, and like how he said it caused more problems.
Well, let me be honest with you. You're confusing points. Because when people say, if you have nothing nice to say, you shouldn't say it at all. Again, remember, we're solutions focused. Telling somebody your problem is not the same as telling somebody the answer. So saying something impolite, rude, or otherwise just causes more problem. It's insulting. Do you follow that? So when they say, if you have nothing nice to say, don't say it at all, what they're saying is quit attacking people. Okay, which is kind of aligned with this, which is if you're having a problem with someone, approach it from a solutions focus. What problem are you trying to solve? Because absolutely, you know, how do I say this? But calling someone else negative name or saying something negative about someone else just enrages them. And what happens next? Well, they call you something. And so the idea that if you have something positive to say that's solutions oriented, absolutely, let's do it. But if you just want to bitch, we're tired of that.
All right.
You statements. Typically when you hear you coming out of your mouth, it's because I want to blame or deflect. You know, if you'd been here on time, I wouldn't be stuck. You know, this is your fault. You know, you called the police and now look where I am. This sucks. Typically when you hear you coming from your mouth, it's going to make a person defensive, increases tension, and then finally, the idea of hostility and friction is going to increase. Anytime, please, it's almost a rule of thumb for me with everybody that I know, if you hear the word you coming from your mouth, just think about it for a second. Because I statements always work a lot better. Instead of talking, typically when I hear you, it's like, you know, you really don't understand me. You really don't care. You're always late. And yet another statement might have been, I feel like I'm not appreciated. There are times that I'm waiting that I'm putting out more energy than I think I should. And I'm asking you to work with me because I don't want to live like this. Big difference, okay? When we look at number three, scorecarding for leverage, scorecarding. Scorecarding is when I put something in your face for the purpose of bringing up the past to beat you down today. You know? And so it's bringing up past mistakes. It does create negative energy. Why? The brain can't tell the difference between a negative past event and happening right now. And when you bring it into the present moment, I call it pissing in your swimming pool. Pissing in your swimming pool. I had the kids in my backyard swimming a few weeks ago. I had 8 kids jumping, swimming, 3 hours in there. Just, and I had a big thing of Kool-Aid, they're drinking. And not one person used the bathroom. Not one person peed in the garden. And then I went outside and I said, that's it, y'all out the pool. Why? Because I just look at the LED from my pool and it says, somebody pissed in my pool. And then you should have seen all of them. He did it. They all had peed in the pool. You all know they do. Can't you imagine what the Disney property would be like if they actually had a pee meter? They'd be shut down every day of the week. Scorecarding destroys motivation. And then, if you will, my last slide. A relationship never gets any better than the scorecard it keeps. A relationship never gets better than the scorecard it keeps. If you keep bringing up the past, what are you going to get?
Stay stuck in the past.
Yeah. Take a look at number 4, talking more than I listen. Y'all have any friends that talk more than you listen?
Yep.
You really? What do you do when you see them coming?
Run the other
way. I have some buddies that just never shut up, you know. I go to the base gym and I'm trying to work out, and the second I see them coming, I go find something else to do. Because I can't work out. All they want to do is talk, you know.
Come on, when you're sitting with them, and they constantly...
Yeah, and a lot of us, the behaviors and the way we think today is an extension of the way we were raised. But a lot of times we never stop to look back to say, is that what I want to continue? And yes, 40 years old, you might very well look back over your life and decide to change. Why? Because I'm being who I've been taught to be, and I'm not who I want to be. Does that make sense to you? I'd like to give you this next slide. A relationship never gets any better than the problem it solves, but a relationship never rises above the problems it can't solve. A relationship never rises above the problems it can't solve. Look, some of you guys don't want to be in a relationship. I'm not going to take that away from you. You can be as single as you want to be for your whole life. That's not a problem. But when we decide to make that decision to be in a relationship, I give you several things to go by, 5 levels. Acquaintances become friends, friends become roommates, roommates become companions, and companions become lovers. And then I give you these characteristics. You have no idea. Look, this is what I developed. You're not going to find anywhere else, but it may help you. It may help you when you find out that, guess what? Number 5, collaborative lifestyle. How do we live together? Collaborative. How do we co-labor? Life is what God gave you. Style is how you lead it. Think about that. Life is what God gave you. Style is how you lead it. 2 different people coming to share. 1 lifestyle is tough. It's tough. And if you have a partner that says to you, I'm not changing for you, run like hell. Well, here we go. Another one. Ready? You knew the way I was when you met me, and if you didn't like it, you shouldn't be here. And if you got somebody that's saying that, get out. Quickly. Okay? We're going to talk about a few things. Number 1, first thing I want to talk about is habits. All of you guys have habits, right?
Yeah.
Tell me a habit you got. Get one out.
Video game.
You know, boy, that one hits hard. Because when my son was in his teens, it was just, oh my God, all the arguments about, will you please stop video games and do your homework?
Yeah.
Video games. That's a good habit. Give me another habit.
Overworking.
Work can be a habit. Right? Remember, wait. A job is what you do to put food on the table. A career is what you do when it's your passion. And I get a lot of guys, they put a lot of hours in because it's their passion. It has nothing to do with money.
Right.
Nothing to do with money. And yet, understand, it's important as you look at characteristics, love relationship, you may have to make the decision, you got to cut back. If you're not there, and you're so involved in your career that you're giving a disproportionate amount of your energy into that, it's quite possible that your kids may not benefit from you being a father. And it's quite possible that your kids have better relationships with the director of the YMCA or the kids down the block. You know? Dangerous stuff, though. However, habit. A habit is an unconscious pattern. Unconscious pattern. You know, when we look at Tampa and we look at the traffic patterns, you know, we tend to drive the same route over and over again. And a lot of times I'm driving the same route and I don't even think about the red light, the green light. I'm just driving. Now it's, if you will, a habit. And yes, driving at time is a habit. Also, what we do when we drive, radio. I like to listen to self-improvement stuff. But you have other habits in your life. Do you work out at the gym? Do you pump iron? Do you have a spiritual relationship with God? Do you pray in the morning? Do you pray at night? Habits. The things that when you don't do them, you self-correct to do them. You self-correct because you've noticed the change. But you know, the problem I have with this, a lot of people don't realize that you are responsible for the habits you develop. And guess what? There are times that you will break a bad habit, but you have to replace it with a good one. You can't just stop doing something. You got to start doing something to stop something else. Does that make sense to you? Listen first, talk twice. I have had to learn to listen. I've had to learn to ask, okay, hey, ready? Here we go. This it's called reflective questions. Try it. Y'all leave here, go out, do your day, do your weekend. Try it. The last thing that someone says to you as they're talking to you, take that and reflect it back in terms of inquisitiveness.
What's that mean?
Say, how was your day? You know, my weekend. How was your weekend? My weekend was great. I went fishing and, you know, it was kind of out there with the kids. Oh, how did the fishing go?
So that's more like an active listening.
Absolutely.
Correct.
We call it reflective questions is active listening. Correct. But here's what's cool about it. Most people will not even be aware you're doing it. And as they feed into just talk and talk and talk, first of all, you're going to find you're not going to say much about yourself. That's important. Number two, you're going to find that people change their perceptions of you, and they'll begin to say things, what a nice guy. What a good... And they don't know you any better than they did before, other than that you took the opportunity to validate them by taking interest. Somebody had their hand up? Yes, sir.
What do you do when you come in a situation where you ask a person like that kind of question, like you try to do that with somebody, and they just kind of that type of person to be like, oh, it was straight. They keep it very simple. Like you see, like how was your day? Like they real dry. You understand? Like blah.
You know, first of all, yes, we have people that really don't know how to talk. And they're very closed and very shut down. I have a buddy like that, and I'll call him right now and say how his day is, and he'll keep it so short and so sweet, I'm uncomfortable. And yet, I really respect him. He's a scholar in my field, he's well known, and yet I cannot figure out how to get him to have a discussion about himself and his life. And those are the people that we just have to give up. We just have to identify that, you know, they're not the kind of folk that wants to have this type of relationship. And you got to respect their desire for privacy, if you will. Some of us are raised in such a way that if you ask questions, people become suspicious. Why are you so interested in me? And I'm not sure that's an asset. I think that's a liability, because my good friends are the ones that are calling me right now and say, hey, Gordy, how you doing? And my good friends are the ones that have asked enough questions to know me enough to know that something unusual, as I've talked to you about this idea of Rocky Mountain spotted fever, I got a few guys that call, just see how I'm doing. You know, and I don't abuse it, AB, Latin, over, abuse it, abuse to overuse. Because be careful, you'll ask some people how they're doing and then you're sorry you're asked. What do I mean by that? When I say, hey, how you doing? And you're sorry.
My bills and, you have-
and they never shut up. They complain and they act like victims. I don't have time for victims. I don't have time for victims. If you want to tell me about a problem you got and how hard you're trying to solve it, I'm all in. But if you just want to bitch and tell me about how life's unfair, I don't have time for that.
That's negative.
What do you do with something like that? Because I'm currently talking to somebody.
That's your point.
And that's every time I...
We are all mentors to some extent. Mm-hmm. And so you have to go back and say, you know, I hear what you're saying, but you know, let's work on how we can solve the problem instead of complaining about the problem. And if you want me to be a person to brainstorm, I'm the right person. But if you want me to be someone that just listens to how life is negative and life isn't working, I'm probably the wrong person. You know? Dysfunctional habits in relationships. I want to remember, that's where we started. I said, hey, I'm Dr. Pillay, I'm going to talk about dysfunctional. Hey, we're hitting home run now. These are the top eight that I see in as I've done my clinical practice. The top eight. The number one I see that dysfunctional that seems to be reported more than any other is?
Silent treatment.
Yeah. You'd be surprised how many people are skilled at the silent treatment. And yet, the silent treatment is a passive-aggressive act. The silent treatment, do you know what I mean by passive aggressive?
Hey, that's so true.
I'm aggressive.
That's what happened to me.
You realize how hard it is not to talk to someone?
That's so
it's an
true.
Intentional act. So I'm aggressively pursuing this relationship in a negative way by being passive. You don't answer text messages, you don't answer telephones, you stay away from places on purpose. Passive aggressive. When we look at people that do the silent treatment, they tend to create more problems. Why? Because as I remove my partnership from you and don't actively involve in solutions, problems accumulate. Third bullet says that it's used more by introverts than extroverts. Introverts tend to use this more than extroverts. Why? Introverted personalities, they tend to stay to themselves. They tend to be good listeners, but as they accumulate problems, they don't look for solutions. If you will, I have a problem like my computer, I get on Google, I find a solution someplace.
Tried that 20 years ago.
You know? But when we didn't have Google, sometimes I pick up the phone and call people. Introvert people are not likely to reach out. That's it. It's not a personality flaw, because sometimes we have to teach an introvert personality, you gotta step up to the plate. You can't just look at the dashboard with the red light and say, oh my God, look, I got a red light. You might have to ask somebody, what does a red light mean? You might have to go to Jiffy Lube, but understand, introverted personalities tend to isolate emotionally. My extroverts always tell me what's going on. Not a problem. Say, how you doing? Oh, doc, let me tell you. Introverts, hey man, how you doing? Good, I'm fine. Next. And then, if you will, last part of this, when we find people that do the silent treatment as a habit, this is a highly, highly, highly dysfunctional love relationship. You can stay married to ever, forever, with a silent treatment, because nobody argues and fights. But what do you think the kids learn? Yeah, they don't problem solve, they learn how to communicate. Yes, sir?
Oh, I'm sorry, I just wanted to ask. Growing up, you know, they teach us a lot, like if you don't have something nice to say, don't say nothing at all. But doesn't that affect into the silent treatment? Because I use that tactic in one of my relationships.
Say it louder one more time. Repeat it slowly so they hear you.
Growing up, in households in general, you hear a lot of, if you don't got nothing nice to say in schools too, like, you know, don't say nothing nice at all. If you don't got nothing nice to say, don't say nothing at all. I try to use that tactic in a relationship, and like how you said, it caused more problems.
Well, let me be honest with you. You're confusing points. Because when people say, if you have nothing nice to say, you shouldn't say it at all. Again, remember, we're solutions focused. Telling somebody your problem is not the same as telling somebody the answer. So saying something impolite, rude, or otherwise just causes more problem. It's insulting. Do you follow that? So when they say, if you have nothing nice to say, don't say it at all, what they're saying is quit attacking people. Okay, which is kind of aligned with this, which is if you're having a problem with someone, approach it from a solutions focus. What problem are you trying to solve? Because absolutely, you know, how do I say this? But calling someone else negative name or saying something negative about someone else just enrages them. And what happens next? Well, they call you something. And so the idea that if you have something positive to say that's solutions oriented, absolutely, let's do it. But if you just want to bitch, we're tired of that.
All right.
Number two is you statements. Number two, that man left, and that's the same guy I threw out last week, so I'm kind of done with this. I will gladly move him to any program he wants to go, but obviously I'm not the right program for him. You statements. Typically when you hear you coming out of your mouth, it's because I want to blame or deflect. You know, if you'd been here on time, I wouldn't be stuck. You know, this is your fault. You know, you called the police and now look where I am. This sucks. Typically when you hear you coming from your mouth, it's going to make a person defensive, increases tension, and then finally the idea of hostility and friction is going to increase. Anytime, please, it's almost a rule of thumb for me with everybody that I know, if you hear the word you coming from your mouth, just think about it for a second. Because I statements always work a lot better. Instead of talking, typically when I hear you, it's like, you know, you really don't understand me. You really don't care. You're always late. And yet another statement might have been, I feel like I'm not appreciated. There are times that I'm waiting that I'm putting out more energy than I think I should. And I'm asking you to work with me because I don't want to live like this. Big difference, okay? When we look at number three, scorecarding for leverage, scorecarding. Scorecarding is when I put something in your face for the purpose of bringing up the past to beat you down today. You know? And so it's bringing up past mistakes. It does create negative energy. Why? The brain can't tell the difference between a negative past event and happening right now. And when you bring it into the present moment, I call it piston in your swimming pool. Piston in your swimming pool. I had the kids in my backyard swimming a few weeks ago. Had 8 kids jumping, swimming, 3 hours in there, just, and I had a big thing of Kool-Aid, they're drinking, and not one person used the bathroom, not one person peed in the garden. And then I went outside and I said, that's it, y'all out the pool. Why? Because I just look at the LED from my pool and it says, somebody pissed in my pool. And then you should have seen all of them. He did it, he did it. They all had peed in the pool. You all know they do. Can't you imagine what the Disney property would be like if they actually had a pee meter? They'd be shut down every day of the week. The scorecarding destroys motivation. And then, if you will, my last slide. A relationship never gets any better than the scorecard it keeps. A relationship never gets better than the scorecard it keeps. If you keep bringing up the past, what are you going to get?
Stay stuck in the past.
Yeah, yeah. hey, sir, you've been gone for 5 minutes. I'm not sure if you think that you can walk out for 5 minutes. But, you know, I threw you out last week because you fell asleep. And this week, these guys have all been sitting here. Not one person left the room, but you left for 5 minutes. I gotcha. So it's called a potty break before we start, or take a minute and run like hell. But you've been gone for 5 minutes. I got a whole group of men that don't understand that because they've all been here for weeks and none of them run off to the bathroom for 5 minutes. What do you want to do? Just decide. You know, you're going to sit in class, pee before you start, pee after you whatever, but you're bringing a lot of attention to yourself that I don't really need. I don't need it. I don't want it. And understand, but why don't you do that before? Because if class has been 10 minutes and you got a crap, you don't think you had the crap before you got here? All right, whatever. Carrie's licensed in family practice medicine. Talk to her before you leave, and maybe she can help you with her bowel movements. Take a look at number four, talking more than I listen. Y'all have any friends that talk more than you listen? You really? What do you do when you see them coming?
Run.
Yeah. I have some buddies that just never shut up, you know. I go to the base gym and I'm trying to work out, and the second I see them coming, I go find something else to do. Because I can't work out. All they want to do is talk, you know.
Come on, when you're sitting with them, and they constantly pop. You don't want to talk to me.
You don't love me.
You don't love me. Well, that may be true. It may be true that you don't love them. You know, when people talk more than they listen, they tend to be that second bullet. They usually are competitors, and they like to win. What do we know about competing personalities? What do we know? Come on, talk up. What do we know about competing personalities?
Listen for things to use against you.
Well, you know, I wouldn't have said it quite that way, but yeah, go ahead.
They're trying to make their situation better than yours. Like anything you say, that'd be like, say something.
Competitors only listen to collect information to prove you wrong.
They be little people a lot.
Yes, sir.
My ex-wife always say, oh, that's why we're not together, because you won't have the last word.
You know, I hadn't heard that in a long time, but when I was a kid, my mom used to chase me around with a belt because I had to have the last word. Yeah. You shut up. You don't say another word. Gordon, I'm like 12 years old. You don't say another word. And I'd say, yes, ma'am. Good. Yes, sir. Well, when you have people that talk more than they listen, a lot of times, you know, they're just trying to exchange feelings. And sometimes, if you will, it's just the wrong time. You know, it's not the right place. It's not the right opportunity. And I'm not saying that talking more than you listen is bad. It's just what happens if you got a partner that shuts down because you talk too much. See, that's where we get into a serious issue. Yeah. You know, and if you will, if you're one of these people like to talk, then you may have to take a long pause. It was only 3 seconds. It seems like longer, huh?
Yeah.
And I'm counting. 1, 2, 3. That was 5 seconds. And sometimes when you take a pause, they feel pressure. Like, oh, I feel this pressure, you know? And sometimes that's needed. Number five, if you will, of the dysfunctional things that people do. We distort and we exaggerate. Now, one of your handouts that we have today is distortions, and we may not have time, but understand, you know, if you're going to fight against this one, just keep to the problem, and don't make it bigger and bigger and bigger. Just keep it manageable. Keep it to where it is, and don't use it as you always, you never, you never care about me. You always, you know, stay away from the big stuff. And then finally, you know, people tend to distort because the emphasis is to get away from the problem that we're trying to solve. And that becomes a dysfunctional problem, okay? Number six, emphasizing facts will destroy a person's emotional bond.
Emphasizing facts.
If I am always about you never being late, or I heard about you and your ex, or I can't believe you got the goddamn car back and I'm on empty again. And every time I get the car, it's on empty because you've been driving it. And I'm tired of my car having a little red light on because you were driving the car and you can't stop at Wawa. Oh, and by the way, when I go to Wawa, I bring you a sandwich and you never bring me a sandwich. The least you could do while you're going inside to get your pay is to give me a goddamn sandwich. And oh, by the way, it's Saturday morning and for the last four Saturday mornings, I have brought you donuts. And where's my donut? Yes, sir.
I hear that all
Yeah, but you know, again, the idea is when we emphasize feelings because I love you. You know, that's the important part. The idea that I'm emphasizing how I feel. I really look forward to being with you. You know, I really look forward to Sundays because it's the one day that we get to enjoy life. You know, yes, we've been through tough times and, you know, we've made it through tough times. Remember that last point? It's not what's happened. It's how you feel about what's happened. You know, we all go through tough times, and I wish to hell I could tell you it's not that way. I wish I could tell you it's not that way. You know, Carrie's 6 months pregnant. It's a boy. And of the Pelay clan, there are no more boys. I'm it. And I can't even begin to tell you the joy on that Thursday night when I found out from the testing that it was a boy, as I told all the guys. And then here we are, Friday morning, the baby's dead. And my wife's not expected to live. Carrie didn't expect her to live. And the feelings that I was stuck with were just huge. Huge. Oh my God. I was so numb. I was so tired after spending the night in the hospital and trying to keep track because every time a heartbeat, they expected it to stop. And it didn't. And it didn't. And I'm with her in intensive care, room one. Bed one, intensive care at, I guess we were at St. Joseph's. And I can tell you that this happened so fast because I brought her to the hospital like at lunchtime and I never went home. The school teacher brought my son home with him, which was wow. And so now we're in the next day, the school teacher had brought Tyler to school and he got sick. He got sick at school. Now me, I'm in crisis. I'm really just watching the monitor, and I don't even know where to go with this. And the phone rings, and it's a school teacher, and she says, "Your son is sick and has to go to the doctor." And I'm, how can this possibly be happening? You know, how can this? This is impossible. Well, we were part of the military at the time. And I didn't have any family in the area. And the only person I knew personally was the one star at the base, at the time, Brigadier General Harry Radigy. And, you know, that's a pretty significant position. I called his cell phone. He answered. He was a J6 for Central Command. And I said, and he could tell, I said, "Harry, I need your help." He could tell. I didn't say General Radigy. I said, "Harry, I need your help." Immediately shift roles. "Gordy, what's going on?" "Carrie's not expected to live, man. My son's sick. I can't get him to the hospital. I can't get him to the doctor. And I'm asking you, please, help me in some fucking way, because I don't know what to do." This is God's honest truth. MacDill Air Force Base, he picks up the wing commander. The wing commander puts him in a car, brings him to the hospital, and I handwrite a power of attorney. Handwrite a power of attorney, wing commander. MacDill, yep, swear to God. And they find my son and bring him to the doctor. I wasn't distorting, man. I still can't imagine that kind of stuff could happen to somebody all at one time. We call those nodal events. The day that your car breaks, and you don't have a spare tire, and your cell phone battery is, your cell phone has been turned off. Call those nodal events. You ever have any nodal events?
Yeah.
Got a nodal event, sir?
No.
New guy. You ever have a nodal event?
Nodal event.
Nodal event.
I know one.
How about you? Nodal event?
Yeah, I'm all the time.
Okay. Can you come up with one recently?
Not recently.
Anybody? Now I'm ready for others. Who about you?
Me?
He had his hand up, but if you got something, that's good.
I was out on my boat, and my motor broke down, and I ain't have seat tow, so I'm stuck out there for about 5 hours.
Oh, that sucks.
I don't have seat tow, my motor's broke. And you know what? It would have been really a notable event when the worst storm in history comes over, and you got lightning everywhere.
You got a lot
more than that, be sinking some shit. Yeah. Like, you can see the black clouds coming, you know, and your motor, you're tick, 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 yeah, tick, 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 you know? Or even better, you got the biggest fish in the fucking world, and you got to cut the line because you got to run like hell. Yeah, anybody else? Yeah.
Yeah, about the flat that happened to me this weekend. I mean, I was just driving and came to see my lawyer, and I'm driving and making a turn. Next thing you know, some people said, oh my God.
And no, that, no event.
I mean, I had a money, a piece of flat, I ran back, I had to drive all the way to a gas station and try to change both of the tires, so it was not good.
You know, the truth is, it's not any one thing. It's when they all hit at the same time. Mm-hmm. That's when the feces hits the oscillating airfoil. Shit hits the fan, right? Number six, emphasizing facts will destroy a person's emotional bond. We already talked a little bit about it. The more I emphasize everything that you've done wrong, the more that when I see you coming, I just want to stay away. You got to remember, it's not what's happening, it's how you feel about what's happening. You always have to push the feelings. It's not about what's happening, it's how I feel. If the person doesn't respond to your feelings that you're experiencing as a result of what's happening, then maybe you do need to move on. Maybe you do. The problem is that, you know, real friends, and I'm sure all of y'all have real friends. I've got a couple, one in particular moved away, and I'll call Robert in a heartbeat. The first thing Robert will do is ask me questions in such a way I can feel it, that he wants to put himself in my shoes to experience what I'm experiencing. And you can tell by the way he talks to me. Real friends. It's not just collecting information, it's what are you experiencing and what way that I can be a part of this, okay? Number seven, if you will, squirrel caging. Spinning, 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 negative thoughts. You get in your car, and while you're driving home, you're really aggravated because you got to work late tonight, and it's not fair because six other people aren't on the overnight shift, but I'm on the overnight shift, and I'm so tired of doing this. Spinning, spinning, spinning. You get home, and you say, God, that was a quick trip home. And it wasn't. Your brain is so actively involved and deep in thoughts that time sort of collapses. And if you will, for a lot of us, squirrel caging is a bad thing. If your body is repetitively thinking negative thoughts, your physiology responds. Your physiology responds. The hormones, the positive hormones. You go to the gym and you look at somebody that's pumped up, and I guarantee you, as they're working out, they're thinking about what's possible. They're looking at the weights. Boy, I wish I could make it. I want to do 225 this week. I did 215 last week. And as they think about goals and aspirations and times and what they're doing, they do the best. Absolutely, you can measure a person's workout and the quality of their workout by doing blood sampling. You can see. What are the chemicals? What hormones were produced? How are you doing? Got that? But then look at the guys that go to the gym and they're just dragging ass around. They're saying, what for? I should be doing something else. Why am I here? It's Saturday. It's noon. Why am I here? And you can always tell. But the same thing, squirrel caging. If you think and ruminate positive things, your body emotionally will build in positive ways. But if you, in fact, think negative things, you're going to re-feel it. How many times are you gonna go through the divorce of the person you used to love if every time you think about it, and you don't realize the brain can't tell the difference between a memory of a past negative that happened? You gotta quit pissing your own swimming pool. Sometimes it's okay not to talk about a bad relationship because it's a decision that you take it too hard. Now, there may be a time that you have to decide to talk to the right person and get this shit off your plate. But I'll be the first one to tell you, a lot of guys that work with you, when they leave here, they truly think about the wrong negative stuff. You know what? Sometimes we got to do a simple reframe. Here's a simple reframe. Just imagine if you'd stayed married to that nut, where you'd be in 10 years. Seriously, that's a good positive reframe. Right? Instead of scorecarding how you've been victimized, start to say, you know what? I would have never met the new person I'm with now if I hadn't gotten out of that one. That's good stuff, man. That's really good stuff. Oh, by the way, when we talk about PTSD, yes, I have met people that definitely have PTSD, and the combat they went through was relational combat from somebody that truly brutalized them and exhausted them emotionally, spiritually, and financially. Yes, my perception, you can definitely have, you can be a survivor of a war, and PTSD is alive in broken relationships. Hey, I put this one up there because it's important for me, maybe not for you. I was a blazing codependent for years. Get actively involved in the lives of other people. I tended to get involved with attractive women that just needed help. And I became the savior. Financial savior, scheduling savior, moral support, emotional support, the cheerleader. And yet when I looked at my bank account, I was going broke. When I look at my emotional account, I was being drained emotionally. I gave up a lot. When we tend to be codependent, we tend to get so involved in the problems of others that we get lost. We see, if you look up the characteristics of codependence, and believe I've got a book called Codependent No More, you can look it up on Google, characteristics. Ask yourself the questions and rate yourself. If you're too involved in the problems of another person, that's the first indicator. Because understand, a lot of times, if a person is having serious problems and you let them stew in them, they learn more than if you're running like the cavalry. Does that make sense to you? Sometimes it's better for them to feel the terror, the horror, the anxiety, and you know, have these forlorn thoughts that, oh my God, I am really screwed, and let them stew in it rather than just fix it, because they don't learn. Sometimes we know our children are too spoiled because we give them too many good things. And in relationships, if you're always problem solving, anything that can be learned can be unlearned. And so when we look at alcoholic families, Melanie Beattie put a book out there, but Codependent More, but for a long time, to every alcoholic husband, the theory was there was a caretaking wife that was working extra hours, that was buying the beer, that was taking care of the home and the kids and blah, blah, blah. Now in modern times, we start to realize we have just as many alcoholic women with caretaking husbands as we have alcoholic men with caretaking wives, if you will. Understand though, if you find it difficult to say no to others, that's a big one. That's a big one, okay? Let's get our handouts going real quick. You want the points to ponder? You want to work on the points to ponder?
Yeah, you bet.
Hey guys, my name is Jonathan. Points to ponder, we're doing a true and false first. Emotional abuse is more difficult to recover from than physical abuse.
True.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and the brain, the same part of the brain that's responsible for interpreting physical abuse is also emotional abuse.